original podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort before December 20th, for select dates between October 2010 and September 2011, you can get the Disney Dining Plan at no extra cost and eat for free your entire stay. For more information on this special offer and many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today. Resales DVC is your home for Disney Vacation Club resales. Whether you're buying or selling your part in the Disney Vacation Club, Resales DVC is prepared to walk you step-by-step through the process and make sure your experience is as pleasant as possible. For pricing, availability, and more information, be sure to contact Grandma Jackie and Kin at www.resalesdvc.com or by phone at 866-544-2919 to make your vacation dreams come true.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
Gorgeous, yeah!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it. I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Welcome to our show.
Please welcome your host, Tom Corliss.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the WDWNT Podcast. This is episode 164 for October 4th, 2010. On this week's show, we have another edition of The Golden Age. In this discussion featuring Mickey's Birthday Land, Mickey's Starland, or Mickey's Toontown Fair at the Magic Kingdom, we will continue our quests land by land, area by area, and space by space throughout the Vacation Kingdom to find what is truly the Golden Age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. This segment was actually recorded a few weeks ago and marks the final podcast appearances for one Scott Smith and Chris Lestraps, and personally, I feel it's a fitting farewell for these longtime mainstays of the show. This and much more Walt Disney World information and fun awaits you on this edition of the WDW News Today Podcast.
Ancient Rome or Greece? Athens or Sparta? Birthday Land or Starland? Let us find out when was the Golden Age of the Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome to yet another edition of The Golden Age, where we're going to try and figure out somehow, mathematically, when was the Golden Age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. Tonight, we're going to continue our quest land by land, area by area, and space by space. And tonight, that space is going to be Mickey's Birthday Land / Starland / Toontown Fair. The only land that's changed names 3 times. Joining me for the segment, Mr. Chris Lestraps.
Hi, howdy, hi.
We're switching things up now.
Take that.
Justin Heyman, Hyman Homan.
How's it going?
Jason Diffendahl.
Hey, howdy, hey is that, the appropriate greeting.
That's how it's done. Scott Smith.
Hello there.
And Anthony Akula.
Hey, hey, hey.
And that's most certainly how it's not done.
Come on, you've seen 70s television.
Somewhat. I wasn't born in the 70s, so.
So does that ever matter?
It'd be difficult. But anyway, that's what TV Land is for.
Yeah.
So the Golden Age tonight, an interesting one, finally getting to the one that's actually mentioned in the introduction of this segment. So let's talk about it. We got 4 hours tonight, not a whole lot of changes to this area over the years. Starts with the 1988 era, which, of course, it opens as Mickey's Birthday Land. You have the mini surprise party show, Grandma Duck's Farm, Mickey's Birthday Land Express, the renaming of the Walt Disney World Railroad, and the addition of all those wonderful cardboard cutout characters along the way. Mickey's House, the small suburb of Duckburg, which you could not enter, is just a bunch of facades. There is Mickey's Playground, Mouser-sizing, and the Mouse Maze. Very exciting time. You have the 1990 era. Yes. Well, it was meant to be a temporary land, so in 1990 there were some changes. It became Mickey's Starland, and we got a new show, Mickey's Magical TV World Show, debuted. In 1996 era, it becomes Mickey's Toontown Fair, the addition of Goofy's Barnstormer to replace Grandma Duck's Farm, Minnie's Country House, Donald's Boat, Pete's Gas Station, the Toontown Hall of Fame, County Bounty, and Toon Park all come on board. And finally, a whole lot of time later, in the 2008 era, it's Pixie Hollow opening inside the Hall of Fame in the tent. Mickey's Toontown Fair, in the giant tent, yeah, basically. So it was a long time before any changes happened, and that's by far the biggest all those years later. Of course, we all know this land is now on the chopping block, but since our Golden Age equation will probably be finished before the year ends, we figured it should be here, and we can't go beyond. We can't look forward. So it has to be something up to this point. So Pixie Hollow is as far as we're going to go. So those of you who have heard the segment before know how this works. If not, I'll explain it. We're going to go around to each member of our panel. They're going to pick one of the eras, and based on popular decision overall, we're going to put a number into the giant equation that's someday going to lead us to the Golden Age of the Walt Disney World Resort. So we will begin with Chris Lestraps. Chris, what is the Golden Age of Birthday Land, Starland, Toontown Fair?
This was not a difficult decision for me at all. It was actually very easy for me to pick. One, because I don't care about Pixie Hollow. Two, I don't like Mickey's Toontown Fair in its current incarnation.
Oh.
And three, I think there was lost or lost when it became Mickey's Starland. So, obviously, my choice is the 1988 era Mickey's Birthday Land. Many reasons for this. I was 7 years old when I saw Mickey's Birthday Land for the first time. It was exciting because it was a new land in the Magic Kingdom that I'd never seen before. It was just kind of very cool to have this new expansion area. Granted, it wasn't really flashy, no big thrill rides, something like that. But for a seven-year-old, this land was actually pretty awesome.
It was built for the young.
Throw in Duckburg, which was my favorite Disney afternoon cartoon. Just having that there.
Duckburg was a Disney afternoon cartoon?
Yeah, it was on the Disney afternoon.
Was that there was a show called Duckburg?
DuckTales.
Thank, that's what I thought. I was saying Duckburg. Yeah.
Duckburg was part of the Disney afternoon.
Of DuckTales, yes.
Woo!
Okay.
Crazy people.
Want to make that clear.
And my all-time favorite show, I think, at the Magic Kingdom is Minnie's Surprise Party Show. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with the show. I wanted to see every single showing. I made my dad videotape it several times. I just love this show, and it was a very cool stage show, the way it was done and everything. But I think one of the coolest things about this is Mickey's Birthday Land was kind of a part of this whole celebration. It was Mickey's 75th birthday, so everything kind of enveloped
60th that. Birthday.
60th birthday. Yeah, that's right.
75 Sorry. Was in 03.
My problem. My bad. From the minute you walked into the park with Minnie giving the announcement saying, hey, something's going on back in the park to go check out, to the retheming of the train to actually get on the train to go back there to surprise Mickey. And this was also the first time you actually knew a place where you could see Mickey Mouse for sure every single time you're in the park, because back in those days, there was no meet and greet specific areas. Basically, they wandered the parks freely, kind of here and there.
Oh, the good old days.
And you just kind of grabbed them as you grabbed them. You knew Mickey and friends were going to be back there. And it was just, in every successive era, it seems like something more and more was just diminished, and it was just kind of there to keep it there. I was okay with the Mickey Starland, but it lost a lot of its theming because it was really around this whole birthday theme. And Toontown Fair, it was just a sad attempt to kind of mimic Toontown from Disneyland at that point in time. So for me, hands down, without a doubt, Mickey's House, Mickey's Playground, everything about it was just great. And so that's why I picked 1988.
And tonight we get to make a great point. So many people think that Disneyland began the whole Toontown concept. It started many years earlier in 1988 with Birthdayland. That was the inspiration for Toontown. So keep that in mind. Long before Toontown was even a thought. Mayor Justin Heyman, whatever you're going with.
Well, this probably comes as no big surprise to folks, but much like Chris, I have to go with 1988. Something sentimental about that original incarnation, much like Chris said, the theming was kind of special and kind of great, especially when you were approximately the same age as Chris. So, you know, a young kid and like Chris said, going to Mickey's birthday party, and that was definitely exciting and fun. And that the Birthdayland Express was rethemed and kind of led you into that new area of the park that really wasn't there before, was kind of special. And it was also deemed to be temporary at the time, which also makes it kind of special, though it stuck around clearly for much longer than its welcome was originally planned for.
It was better than the wand, though.
Yeah, that's true. It had it only lasted even 10 years, that would have been kind of something cool, because we have not seen a really permanent structure last, other than the wand perhaps, for such a short period of time with the intent of it being that. And I think that since 1988 and 1990 and moving on into the late 90s, it has really overstayed its welcome. So for those reasons and a lot of what Chris said, I don't want to reiterate, but it was just a very cool concept at the time. And like I said, trying to stretch that out, make it Starland, and then Toontown Fair was just a feeble attempt to, I think, keep something taking up space that otherwise at the time would not have been used.
That's it. Jason, what do you got?
I've got the 1996 era.
Oh, he kept us in suspense there.
1990, period.
Oh. This is surprising, because Jason usually picks the earliest era possible.
I do.
He's playing devil's advocate tonight.
Well, there's a couple reasons why I picked the 1996 era. Part of it is that that entire land really lacked any sort of significant attraction other than the Walt Disney World Railroad until Goofy's Barnstormer opened. So, I mean, you could go there, you could see shows and meet the characters, but that was about it.
And Mickey Moo.
And the cow. But it really wasn't a big draw, I don't think, at that time, unless you were there to visit characters. And I was never really there to visit characters. I was much happier going on the rides than I was standing in long lines to get my picture taken with Mickey Mouse. Now, my parents made me do it, but it wasn't the most exciting thing to stay. I would rather stand in line for 20 minutes for Space Mountain than I would to meet Mickey Mouse.
See, but were there... See, I don't remember waiting in character lines at any point before, like, the mid to early 90s.
Well, but see, the problem was that when Birthdayland opened, that was the big deal where Mickey was going
to
be.
To meet Mickey, yeah. Mm-hmm. See, but I never really went in that line. But still beyond that, there was nowhere you really waited to meet characters.
No, not anywhere else. But I think Goofy's Barnstormer really was a turning point in this area because it marked the first significant attraction to open in this land. And the other thing I think that's significant is that the transformation to Mickey's Toontown Fair actually marked the decision to take this from what was always a temporary intention into something more permanent. And so everything in 1996 that was redone into a much more permanent looking setup. And that gave it, I think, a different feel. It gave it a feel like it was supposed to be there, as opposed to, you know, they threw up this tent on some mound of dirt and hopefully you'll like it because they just wanted to take up space. So those two, and I mean, obviously Goofy's Barnstormer was a permanent installation. So those two things kind of go hand in hand in 1996 to turn what was really a temporary area for Mickey's birthday. You know, Mickey's Starland really was a stretch in terms of, well, Mickey's birthday celebration is over. Now what are we going to do with this place? That was probably the worst layover. But then when they turned it into Mickey's Toontown Fair, it kind of was repurposed into a more permanent land. And so the more permanent feel of the entire area just made me feel better about it as opposed to something that was done on the cheap. And that is why I chose 1996.
Scott Smith.
I also chose 1990.
Well, you gave it away when you said you also chose.
Whoops. Anyway, I chose 1996, yes. Jason kind of hit the nail on the head. It was a step towards making this land more permanent. But it became a more cemented addition to the park. But aside from all that Jason said, which is all true, I have a more just personal reasons for picking Mickey's Toontown Fair, because in terms of Mickey's birthday land, I was 3 when it opened and 5 when it closed. So although I'm sure I might have seen it, I was way too young to have any memories about it or remember anything about it. I vaguely remembers Mickey's Starland and Mickey's Magical TV World show. Is that the one with the Disney Afternoon people?
Because
I remember a Bonkers Bobcat Bonkers was there and Max from Goof Troop.
That's surprising because I remember Starland, despite being very young, I remember Starland very vividly.
I remember the show and I remember the pre-show and I remember liking the songs they used in the show, but I really don't remember anything about the land itself. And yet, when Toontown opened in Disneyland, I was always a big Roger Rabbit fan, and that's really where the kind of concept of Toontown started, 1988, ironically, when Mickey's Birthday Land opened.
Even though the Toontown Fair doesn't really connect.
Well, no, well, not really, but yeah. As a kid, I would look at Disneyland's Toontown and think, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. I wish we had something like this.
Made your wish come true, but not quite as you had
imagined. Right, yeah, but at that point, I was old enough to like, okay, this is all right, you know? As a kid, I always wanted it, but then by 96, where I was 11, I was getting to be a teenager. I was coming, you know, Timekeeper was making me more of a nerdy Disney fan. I was enjoying it for its more permanent nature. And as growing older, I realized that it's good enough. It's not as good as a full-fledged Toontown, but it's good to have a place where the characters live. And all this is very ironic considering it's all getting bulldozed. But it's good to know that they're there. It's great that Goofy has a ride. This is a weird thing to focus on, but that really means a lot to me. Like, I ran onto the Barnstormer in June because it was a walk-on. I knew it was going away. So I just ran onto it, and it was such a great little attraction, you know? You know, it had some cool little details in the queue, and it was just so great that the same kind of reason I love PhilharMagic is all these characters have a home and a presence beyond just meet and greets. They have an experience that you can interact with more and take home additional memories of. I just love that Goofy has a roller coaster. I'm glad that
can't that do
he's
that
taken,
with shows though.
I've never been a show person, really. I enjoy
the actor
them.
Has never been a show person.
I haven't.
Interesting.
I haven't. Like yeah. I've enjoyed them, and I appreciate them. You know, now that I'm older, on you know for what they do for crowds, and you know some of them are good. Just as a kid, I was always a get-up-and-go kind of person. There was so much to see and immerse myself into. I never really wanted to sit and watch a show. I did remember liking the Disney Afternoon one, but that was probably just because, you know, that was on what was on TV at the time, and you know, obviously they were just showing what's popular. Same thing, like I like the Ninja Turtles stage show at the MGM Studios, and I don't remember that probably wasn't anything at all.
They really just came out, did a 2-second dance, and then signed autographs.
Yeah, so like I remember, I remember as a show, as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's the best show in the world. You know, so I've never, as a kid, I was never, I was never a show person. I was always an attraction person. And to me, that gave, that was just an aura. Like, Goofy is one of the most important characters in Disney history, obviously. And I just, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Mickey, but recently I've been coming to appreciate Goofy and Donald, maybe because I saw, you know, the voice actors at the D23 Expo and just realizing, you know, these characters are every bit as important and they're all part of the group and they deserve to have their own land and have their own attractions. Again, ironic considering what's happening to it, but that's why Toontown Fair, with its more solid-looking nature, with its more three-dimensional, not just sets that are set up, it's definitely more atmospheric. It's got tons of theming. It's just a great familiar home. Do I love it as a land? No, because I hate going back there and it being sort of a dead end. It's really an awful crowd control mess.
It's
I really
not
don't
a
like
dead
it.
End. There's that secret path to Tomorrowland.
Oh, that's right. It just seems like a dead end because there's always so many people getting lost there. Like there's
always
because
no one knows. No one even after they look down it, no one thinks that Tomorrowland path goes anywhere.
And and they don't see the signs that say to Tomorrowland.
No, just it's too. You know why that path is too thin? And at the Magic Kingdom, everyone's used to just giant pathways. And so you never would think that's a pathway.
And I'm not saying I've never been a big playground kid. I was never a big playground kid or, you know, adult, as it were. But just
Scott still goes down the slide in Toon Park.
No, just going through the houses, I think is a great.
They're cool.
Little experience. Like, it's a great little attraction in
and
of
you
got to
remember, Mickey's house did exist long before Toontown.
It did,
Fair,
but this made it more Toontown-ish, which I was always a big fan of. And I always
so you got to remember, they sort of just cloned the concept, and then they put, we built Minnie's house for Disneyland, let's put Minnie's house here, let's put Donald's boat here.
I like it because I think it gave the Magic Kingdom a more personal feel. But Disneyland has that personal feel. You know, if Disneyland has that cozy personal feel, I think it gave the Magic Kingdom, which can be, you know, sometimes intimidating, a nice personal feel.
Yeah, especially the architectural styles. You look at Tomorrowland's very, you know, very cold steel, you know, sort of land. And even looking at, you know, Fantasyland, you've got that giant castle looming. Frontierland's got a giant river. Adventureland, there's a lot of,
trees,
foliage, really closing in on you. Yeah, so that it probably is the most inviting.
Yeah,
maybe of the
I've never really got to experience it that inviting because, like I said, it's always mobbed.
Well, it's not intimidating. The architecture is small. It's
people
not,
just funnel back there and just stay. But it's a great little land, and I really just because. So basically, to put a button on it, this is the land where all of my memories reside. And like Jason said, I think it made a more permanent look to the whole Mickey Land idea, and it just gave some characters a place to live. Like, I don't know why, but the idea of just the goofy roller coaster. I mean, what other character would have a roller coaster?
A clown from Dumbo.
Well, yeah, I know. My turn is very ironic, but so that's my pick.
You know, one issue I always had with kind of the fair theming is why would a house, Mickey's house, be at a fair?
Well, the story is that they're having the fair in there in Toontown.
Yeah, there's just not enough space to space it out. Yes, the fair is essentially in Mickey's backyard, but that's because they don't have the space to put it across the walkway.
It's a stretch.
It is, and I'm not saying this is as good as Toontown or an amazing land. I just think it's a more solid addition.
We just spent a bunch of money on Splash Mountain and New Tomorrowland, so, you know, let's make this overlay fairly inexpensive.
I mean, and technically, like, Duckburg doesn't really, like, it was kind of weird. It was kind of weird.
Well,
the
facades of Duckburg were only there to hide the tents.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, I like them, like Jason said, I like the more permanent, solid nature of it.
Still a lot of tents, I don't know. I don't think.
Again, I just like the goofy roller coaster idea. I think that's such a awesome. I think every park should have a goofy roller coaster.
Well, soon there'll be none.
Well, California Adventure's getting one.
That's true, yeah.
Well, Disneyland's Gadget Go Coaster is basically the same
thing. They just
it's the same thing.
Because it was built earlier, they still were falling on the Gadget character. So.
How much better would how much longer would it have last if it was like based on like a Goofy short or something like that? Not that I have anything wrong with Chippendale Rescue Rangers. I just think the longevity of that.
It's managed to last somehow.
Yeah.
I would imagine there's been 700 pitched overlays of Gadget's Go Coaster, and for some reason, none of them have happened.
Lasted longer than some pavilions at Epcot.
Yeah. Lasted longer than some amazing, amazing attractions in Disney history.
And you know what's really funny is that Gadget's Go Coaster is probably one of the most brand identity confusing attractions because I think a lot more kids identify with Inspector Gadget.
Yep. And there was that big confusion, especially when Disney did the movie for Inspector Gadget. I remember everyone saying, you know, oh, they got an Inspector Gadget coaster at Disney.
And you know what? It's funny that you mentioned brand confusion, because that even just kind of confuses the whole notion of Chip and Dale, because the universe that Gadget lived in, they were Rescue Rangers. They
The Chip idea and Dale Toontown that are living. Is, the idea of Toontown is they're all movie stars, and one of the roles Chip and Dale had was as the Rescue Rangers. So this is just where those characters
live. But
it doesn't necessarily mean they perform in that show. They're actors, basically.
I get that explanation, but that would mean that Gadget's character is the exact same character.
That's
that
also
portrays.
Her name.
She has the same name, and she plays the exact same personality on TV. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's possible.
Again, this isn't going to be as fleshed out as Rackety Raccoon still blowing a hole in Chickapin Hill.
You beat me to mentioning it.
So.
Rackety Raccoon on Twitter. Rascally Raccoon.
Yeah, it's amazing how that hasn't been rethemed yet. Yet Barnstormer is happening before that. Pretty incredible. So we've got 2 for 96. We got 2 for 88. Anthony, what are you going with?
Well, since you're not letting me choose the Pile of Dirt era of next year...
Well, apparently that may or may not happen, so...
maybe Toontown will stick around.
Maybe it will. Who knows at this point? It's guaranteed is the, as far as rumors going around, Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, at least for now. So that leaves Toontown out of the equation, at least for the time being. But again, I would imagine in the next year or so, Toontown will be
gone. Again, that's ironic, too, because they just started Mickey and Minnie's meet and greets in Town Hall.
No, it's not back yet. They have not done that. They're supposedly, again, the rumor is for Toontown's imminent closing that Exposition Hall is going to be the meet and greet. And we believe that is happening. The question is, will they simply leave that room back there, you know, like that for a little while, or is Toontown still set to be demolished in September or whenever, sometime later this year? That's the question right now. But regardless, we need to decide a golden age up to now. So,
Anthony, get on with it.
My choice is 1996.
Ooh. We got 3 for 96 now. I'm going to see if I could save 88, but go ahead, Anthony.
My thoughts pretty much mirror what Jason and Scott have already said, so I'm not going to ramble on. Goofy's Barnstormer brought sort of a quote-unquote headlining attraction to the land. It gave it an actual ride for kids to go on. It most certainly helped the land have more of a less temporary feel to it. That's really all I got to say about Toontown. Not my most favorite place to go.
It's got the chickens from World of Motion in the queue. Barnstormer.
Yeah, World of Motion, a beloved attraction that's missed by so many.
I miss it. I love that attraction.
Hey, leave World of Motion alone.
Everyone knows I have no great love for World of Motion. So
I loved Epcot when
it's
was
fun to be fries. Recycled.
It was the most boring of the Future World pavilions. We won't.
I
get
don't
into
think
it.
So.
Won't get into it now.
Really? It's more boring than It Rained.
And It Rained.
And
Rained.
And Rained. The Deluge.
Yeah, but at least there's manatees over there.
I'm a sea cow.
That's true. Even SeaWorld got rid of its manatees.
Jason, do you hear this blasphemy?
I'm with you guys.
Unless I bring up Horizons, Jason is not going to start yelling.
You know, I really liked World of Motion, but I don't really want to get into that now. I want to have this segment be a respectable length.
Yes.
So I'm just kind of letting it go.
I love how on the show we just have to mention World of Motion chickens, and it becomes an Epcot discussion. That's what I love about this program.
We're Disney nerds.
I'm trying my best not to let it happen, but
so Anthony, are you finished at 1996 era?
Well, I could be really bad and say Goofy's Barnstormer gave it a more more permanent feel than the triangles on Spaceship Earth. Uh-huh. But that would just
be said the forbidden words.
Vic Perrin is rolling over in his grave.
My!
Wasn't him?
Wasn't him? Maybe it was. Who knows?
Yeah, at this point,
Marty Sklar.
So you're good with 96. We're done.
I'm good with 96.
Okay.
That I could say.
So we've got three people for Mickey's Toontown Fair 1996. We've got two people for 1988 Mickey's Birthday Land. So I could tie it and leave us in a sticky wicket, if you will. But unfortunately, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with the 1990 era. And let me explain
just
why.
To be different.
No,
just
not to be different, because I can't believe people picked 88 over 90. Because 90 has everything that 88 had, with the exception of the strange narration on the railroad and the unnecessary plywood characters. 90 brings in an incredible...
And Mini Surprise Party.
Mini Surprise Party was not as good as Mickey's Magical TV World. Mickey's Magical TV World was everything. If you were growing up at that time, that show was everything you wanted when you went to Disney World, because everyone at that time grew up watching the Disney Afternoon, and here was the show that actually had that. There was nowhere else on property that really had the Disney Afternoon characters. They didn't like putting them in the parades for some reason. Every now and then there was a Castle stage show that had them, but this was a permanent place where they always were. And even over the years, they updated the characters in that show to reflect what was in the Disney Afternoon at the time. Goof Troop came in at one point, I remember. Gummy Bears got removed.
Bonkers was in there for...
Bonkers was near the end, yeah. This was a great show, and the fact that you go and see these characters, which were probably the most popular and relevant at the time for the Disney company, anything from the Disney Afternoon, it was great that they were actually being used in the park for a stage show. Bring on, and again, I have nothing against anyone that picked 1988, because I think Birthday Land was fantastic for what it was, and I think all they did with Starland was add a better show. So if you take everything you like about 1988 and just replace Minnie's Surprise Party with what I think is a better show, then obviously 1990 should beat 1988. So that's why I'm going to go with 1990. I just think that stage show was so much better, and I have such fond memories of that stage show. And Disney, and I'm surprised with Chris mentioning how much he liked the fact that Duckburg was there, because it was from a Disney Afternoon show, that he didn't go with the stage show that had the Disney Afternoon characters.
Because I didn't like a lot of those Disney Afternoon shows, but I love DuckTales.
Woo! Okay.
Well, the whole storyline of Mickey's Magical TV World was Scrooge McDuck got stuck in
an elevator. Or the money bin.
Yeah.
Money bin.
The safe, yeah. Or whatever you want to call it.
Someone came out of an elevator.
Yeah, there was an elevator. The host was, what was it, CJ or TJ. It was something that they could use for a man or a woman, because sometimes it was either.
I think it was CJ.
Right, it was either one of them. Either way, it was a name that they could use for either a man or a woman host, but most of the time it was female.
Yeah, Scrooge McDuck, and I remember Max from the Goof Troop had to call Bonkers the Bobcat.
Yeah, that was the final version
to
of the
do
show.
Something.
Yeah.
Who else was it? Was that just those two shows? There must have been other shows.
Near the end, it was, but there was, you know, DuckTales and Chippendale Rescue Rangers and a whole bunch of other ones that were there in the beginning. They constantly changed the characters in that show based on whatever was in the Disney Afternoon lineup at the time. But regardless, that means that 1996, we can't get out of the 90s, it seems, on this segment. 1996.
Disney decade.
Yeah, apparently it was. So 1996 is going to be the golden age of Mickey's Birthday Land, Starland, / Toontown Fair, or whatever you want to call it. Well, Toontown Fair wins. The 1996 era is going to go into our grand equation, and at some point we'll come back and find out when was the golden age of the Walt Disney World Resort.
One. Things have become complacent. Things have become stale. Things are about to change. One.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode 164 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening. You make this show possible and worth doing each and every week. Now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful reminders you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com. or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you have not done so already, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know about the show. Be sure to visit the WDWNT Network Community Forums to vote for upcoming segments and to view the show notes for this and previous episodes. You can do that at wdwnewstoday.com/forums, F-O-R-U-M-S. Don't forget to follow WDW News Today on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT or at WDWNT. Follow the entire WDWNT network at twitter.com/WDWNT network or at WDWNT network. You can make me a friend on Facebook at facebook.com/WDWNT. And while you're over there, make sure you like the WDW News Today fan page over there on Facebook. Coming up in next week's show, episode 165, it is a big one. And revolutionary new idea, and we kick it off next week's show. We begin Who Wants to Be a Podcaster? 10 hopefuls competing over 2 months to fill 2 open slots in the WDWNT podcast team. And the best part about it all, you, the listeners, are going to pick the 2 individuals. It is revolutionary, it is different, and we get to a very fun start on next week's show. Well, since I just previewed next week's show, that means that this week's show is officially over. And I can end it with the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon.
Thank you for listening to the WDW News Today podcast. Be sure to tune in again next week as we continue to bridge the gap between you and the world. Also, don't forget to visit the entire WDWNT network online at wdwnt.com. This is Brian Summers saying goodnight and have a pleasant tomorrow.